Welcome to another sizzling episode of the Blue Line Brothers. I'm Fred.
I'm Frank.
And we're here to ingratiate you into the world of swivels today.
Yes.
Yeah, swivels. We're not promoting hardware stores or anything, but we are going to be delving into the topic of swivels.
Yeah, that's a very rotating type of situation.
It could very well be. Well, it should be. If, once again, in your the proper state of mind.
Yes. Which, I mean, technically, you should be in that state of mind anytime you leave the house.
Exactly. And no matter where you go. But where, Frank, tell me, the last time, well, when did you first hear of the swivel in a tactical situation? When you were in training. Now, does it go back to the military, or was it law enforcement?
I was going to say, it goes back to 89.
Yeah, okay.
So, it's just been a kind of a standard word in my vernacular.
Yes. Keep your head on a swivel.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we been told to keep our head on a swivel?
I mean, I think it's been said so many times that you almost expect it to be said.
Exactly. So. About the other phrase that we got in the law enforcement community, I should say, basic training level on up, is that you only get out of this training what you put into it.
Yeah. they have one that's it's not as... it's not as clean as that one.
Well, yeah, we try to have to be somewhat clean on the Blue Line Brothers channel. Sometimes we slip, you know, and
yeah,
sometimes it just pops out. But, excuse me, yes, we're going to be talking about how to keep your head on a swivel. Because if it works for the military and it works for law enforcement, well, guess what? It might just work for the civilian crowd as well.
It'll work for mom and pop walking down the sidewalk.
There you go. Because you need to know what the heck is going on around you. Period. And we could call that, what, condition yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Is what we would refer to it in the law enforcement training world. As keep yourself in condition yellow. You don't want to stay in green. Because that means you're just not paying attention to jack squat around you.
No.
You know, you're... What, one of the 98 kabillion people in this country that stick their nose in their smartphone and walking down the sidewalk, driving a vehicle, going to the bathroom. I mean, probably going to the bathroom as well.
I was going to say, there's probably more going to the bathroom than anything.
Yeah. People may, there are those that advertise it, but I bet you money there's...
But you know, that does bring up a really good question. Out of that 98 kabillion. Let's just say that there's, at any given time, there's 46 billion that are in the bathroom. Out of that 46 kabillion, how many drop their phone?
I do know of at least two or three acquaintances, professional acquaintances, I might add. In other words, people donning a uniform for a living that have dropped their phones in, let's just say in a restroom receptacle. Yeah.
I'm just going to go and say guilty. I've done it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, the 5-second rule actually applies.
Oh, you were able to snag it in 5 seconds?
Oh, it went under, but I had to see you just... You pull it out real quick and run it underwater, it's fine.
Oh, okay.
It's fine.
Okay, so you have first-hand experience.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Yeah.
And there is a time frame that you say nothing, and then after you reach that limit, you can talk about it.
I see.
Statute of limitations.
Statute of limitations on items dropping into urinals. Yeah, we'll have to keep that in mind. We'll have to actually establish that we'll just use yours as a prima facie case. Then
there you go.
Yeah, that sounds good. But yes, this is the whole idea. Maybe it's a good idea. You know, we've talked about the decision to carry a firearm and things like that. Well, once again, this mindset, the superior mindset of which we refer, or to which we refer, is not inherent upon carrying or brandishing a firearm or any other weapon. Because here's the deal. Your mind is the greatest weapon that you can possess.
Oh, yeah. That is the main weapon that you have. Everything else is just a tool.
There you go.
Because if you can't think of how to get through a situation, it doesn't matter if you have a howitzer sitting next to you, you're useless.
Exactly.
You have to know how to employ that, and you have to know about 52.7 other things that come into play all at the drop of a hat.
Okay, Frank, since you brought that up, can you go ahead and start with the 0.7 item?
Oh, yes, the 0.7 is collateral damage.
Ah, good. That's a good one.
Because in any situation, you're always going to have collateral damage. For those of you that don't know what collateral damage is, let's say I am in a restaurant and I see bad guy over here. Well, the people that's standing or sitting between me and the bad guy is collateral damage. The people that are behind him or to the oblique or the 45 of him are collateral damage. Anything that's not in play is collateral damage. So you try to minimize your tick marks in the collateral damage category.
Well, we've touched on a lot of these points with our first installment, so you want to carry a gun. And, excuse me, something to a reminder is that a civilian does not have a duty to act.
Nope.
Okay, so in other words, just because you happen to be carrying a firearm or a taser or a bazooka or whatever, that does not mean that when something blows up in front of you or around you or behind you that you have to take action.
And, you know, truth be told, I would be willing to bet that 80 to 85% of the civilian population would not
react. Once again, it's one thing to possess the tools. If you are not proficient with the tools, or if you are not comfortable deploying the tools, then it would be best not to deploy the tools or put yourself in a situation to where you would have to do that.
And I, as much as I hate to say it, but of that population, the majority of them would not deploy that tool because they are worried about what's going to happen to them after the fact.
Exactly. That's the thing.
The legal side of it. As opposed to, you know, a quick, fast, in a hurry, bang, 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 and you just saved, you know, little Johnny and his sister and his mom from being, you know, eaten up by the evil bad guy, but you let it go because you were worried about what's going to happen to you on the legal side of it.
Which is legitimate. Mm-hmm. Extremely legitimate, actually. Well,
but legitimate. That is part of, shall we say, this is part of the game. If you're going to strap on a gun and walk out of the house, you have to know. Every bullet that comes out of that gun is attached to a lawyer.
Yes, indeedy.
And it's not necessarily to your benefit, but it's there. You have to be able to justify what you... you know, what you did and the actions that you took to where you can articulate it and say, hey, this is why I did it. Under Indiana law, I am covered blah, blah, blah.
Yes, we call those articulable circumstances within the law, and we also refer to totality of the circumstances when you have to consider everything, all the ramifications, if you will, with your actions or your decision not to act. Once again, as a civilian, you are not required by law or any other means to act. Oftentimes, it may be a very good idea not to do that, because once again, in a law enforcement situation, we can armchair quarterback everything, you know, because we have the we have the benefit of hindsight, and of course, that's how we're trained in the law enforcement scenario, is that we have to make life or death decisions in a split second. And that's why we do the muscle memory training that we do, and the repetitive stuff and all this. And that's one reason why we had made mention, you know, just like with your experience, your recent academy experience last year and things like that, that, you know, a lot has changed in the name of brevity. We need to get more people out on the streets, or in the name of cost-cutting scenario. Okay, we're going to cut hours here because, you know, of the budget and all this stuff. So, lately it seems as though the political side of the house oftentimes comes up with excuses why we have to cut this or why we can't do that. Where actually recently I've heard of one or two agencies not too far away from us that are actually investing more in training, not necessarily ammunition, but training hours. And of course we use things like simunitions and other alternatives to real ammunition when we do force on force training. And we'll start to describe force on force training here in a little bit too, because that's something that can benefit the civilian that chooses to carry a firearm in public. Because it's not just, there's a big difference between becoming a marksman and a gunfighter.
Well, and also there's a part of this equation that a lot of people do not take into consideration. You have a big portion of it is verbal. You have to do your best, whether it's, you know, to try and talk them down, to, you know, use verbal judo, whatever you got to do before it gets to that point that you're going to draw and squeeze.
Well, and that's the other thing. Once again, as a civilian, do you want to get involved in that scenario in the first place? That's what you have to ask yourself. Okay. And once again, just because you have experience and you have training in actually safe manipulation of your firearm, and you can hit your target at 25 yards down range that happens to be static, and a nice little circle or a nice little, whatever. And that, once again, does not make you a gunfighter. It does not inherently bless you with the ability to make split-second life or death decisions.
But you can tear up a paper target.
Well, exactly. You can tear up a paper target, and that's great. Once again, I'm not berating marksmen, because, once again, the way our genre, our generation was trained, you know, we came in the early to mid-90s, and we learned marksmanship first. And we had to prove our ability on a marksmanship level first before we were taught gunfighting skills. And as a matter of fact, if you could not be or prove or exemplify a certain proficiency in safe handling of firearms and marksmanship, well, you just did not move on to the gunfighting level of training. So, and once again, like we've discussed before, and this is one reason we keep harping on this, is that just like Frank's experience earlier last year, you know, where, hey, you've got a week of firearms, you know, quote unquote, basic training level, and all you do for an entire week is shoot a qualification course time after time after time again, involving static targets, standing in a static position, and yet you still had, what, a third of the class not qualify, or almost half, something like that, by the end of that week, which these men and women, a few weeks later, without any additional firearms training, graduated a state-certified course and became certified police officers. And they, you can't tell me that they are prepared to make a split-second life-or-death decision, you know, whether or not to take someone's life or a group of someone's lives in a tactical situation, when it's painfully obvious that most of these, if, well, almost all of those people had no prior experience handling firearms until they arrived at the facility. Now, once again, our generation was a little bit different. Almost all of us had extensive firearms training and years of handling firearms before we even set foot in a police academy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had your... It's either your dad, your grandpa, or your uncle. Somebody was pushing a gun in your face and saying, here, shoot this. Tell me what you think of that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, and of course, as a kid, I was always enamored with hunting and and all this other stuff outdoors. And that's the other thing. We, unlike certain generations after ours, we actually spent most of our childhood outside doing stuff.
Well, okay, and I know this is probably going to blow some minds, but I can remember going to school, and in the parking lot, there are gun racks with guns in it in the parking lot at school.
Yes, exactly.
We had a range in the basement of my high school.
Yes.
So, you know, from a very young age, it was just instilled and made part of your daily life. That's just what it is. It's like, okay, you know, here you go. You and little Johnny are going to go take your 22s out and go shoot, you know, butterflies in the field. Or, you know, you're going to go hunting. You're going to go target shooting with your grandpa and your uncle and your dad. I mean, whatever. It was part of it.
Exactly.
And, you know, when from a very young age, my grandpa always had guns around the house. Always. Laying in a corner, you know, sitting on a table, sitting on top of the old Zenith TV, you know, with the three knobs. Mm-hmm. Always had a gun sitting on it. Do you think I went up and played with it?
Oh, dear God, my dad would have killed me.
I knew what it was. I knew if I was going to pick it up, I knew the steps to take to clear that gun.
I was going to say, your parents or your father and whomever actually taught you how to handle things safely.
Now, it's probably unheard of in today's society, but, you know, my kids, I'm not worried about them because from a very young age, they knew. Okay, what's the first thing you do? Well, make sure it doesn't have any bullets in it. Okay, tell me how to do it. Okay? And then when they can consistently tell me, then it was, I put the pistol down and I said, now show me. And it became a repetitive pattern with them. And I'm, you know, that's the way I was brought up. And look at me now.
The shining example that you are, Frank.
Yeah, but I just don't know what that shining example of.
Well, you know, we might get to that a little bit further down the pike. Yeah. Like like I said, we're a sum of our experiences, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's exactly it. There are a lot of ramifications involving deadly force, and it may not involve a firearm. I mean, there are other tools, if you will, in it, or it could be you're in a situation with your hands or feet,
mm-hmm.
and
or a hammer,
crowbar, you know, all kinds of stuff. But that's the thing. There are a number of aspects that anybody, whether you're in a uniform or not, these are the same aspects that we had to consider, you know, as we were being trained, you know, in a professional setting, you know, to carry a gun and do what we have to do. And that's the thing. Civilians, most of whom, well, many of whom do have some military experience.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, that does not mean, you know, if you happen to be in the Navy and you were a yeoman, you know, how many hours of actual firearms training did you receive if you spent 4 or 8 years as a yeoman? There again, not putting down yeoman, but you know what I'm saying is, you know,
well,
just because one might be in the military doesn't mean that one spent, you know, thousands of hours, you know, perfecting firearm skills.
That particular job would probably be once a year they go to the range, they quote unquote qualify, and that's the last time they see it. It's the last time that they have it in their hand until the following year.
Right. So, once again, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are suddenly blessed with the ability to enter into a gunfight and prevail successfully. Because, oh yeah, I was in the Navy. Even some police officers. Once again, we've touched on that in the past as well. And just like we were talking about with that training experience. I'm like, well, we have even some officers that have been on for many, many years may not have had the opportunity to make a lot of those life or death decisions, just depending upon where they were assigned or what they were doing. So, once again, because one carries a badge doesn't make them...
And that doesn't make that person any less of a cop than someone who's been shot at multiple times.
No, not at all.
I mean, you just didn't have that opportunity in front of you.
Well, it's like Tackleberry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to bang your head against a wall. Oh, I missed a gunplay again.
Uh-huh.
Daggone it, I missed a gunplay. What's wrong with him? Oh, I missed gunplay. You know.
Exactly.
Okay. So, yeah, there are a lot of Tackleberries out here that, you know, and I mean that facetiously. I'm not putting anybody down. Because, once again, there are people that have a lot more experience, and there are people that have a lot less experience than people we know or what have you. But once again, how you handle yourself and realizing that it's a very dynamic situation that you choose to place yourself when it comes to a tactical confrontation with somebody or somebodies.
Yeah, there are so many factors involved that you have to think about, calculate, before you even take that first step.
So you might ask yourself, well, why is Frank and Fred talking about carrying guns again? You know, they covered it a couple months ago. Why the heck are they harping on this stuff again?
No,
might it be, Frank, you happen to notice somebody bending over at the store and a certain item falling out of their waistband?
Yeah. So, you know, there you go to one of these lovely box stores that they have. We won't, you know, mention any names. Walmart. Had something in my throat. Guy literally had a gun stuck in his pants. and he kind of squatted down a little bit to get something off the bottom shelf, and then that ended up being him being on one knee, and a Tupperware gun hitting the ground has a very distinctive sound. And sure enough, it fell right out, fell right on the floor. No holster, no nothing, nonchalant. Oh, picked it up, kind of holding it up for everybody to see. It's like, oh, okay, and then just stuck it back in his pants. Oh, they were sweatpants, mind you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a wonderful idea.
Sweatpants.
Hmm. No holster, loaded weapon.
And, I mean, granted, it wasn't a very large frame gun. I mean, it was a Glock 19, but still.
Well, it's big enough to shoot a round through your hip or your ankle or something like that.
Yeah.
It's definitely big enough to shoot somebody that happens to be walking past you down the aisle.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then you know, you get the ones that, you know, we touched on it before, but, you know, the gun is the new fashion statement. Yeah, because we have gone to the constitutional carry, so everybody and their brother has one now. And it's like, I'm going to go just throw this on my hip and let everybody see it because I'm super cool.
Well, I don't know about you, Frank, but, excuse me, understanding that I am getting older, I guess you could consider me middle age. I guess both of us would be in that middle age group. I've decided that I needed to take, you know, kind of like flip a new leaf in life. And I decided that, you know, my firearm needs to match my shoes and my belt. And now I'm thinking I need to even invest in maybe a matching wallet. You know, so I can... it's all about the ensemble. You know what
I'm
saying? And I'm really getting kind of concerned that maybe people, if they do happen to catch a glimpse, because I normally carry in such a fashion that nobody can see it or even know that I'm
I've kind of gone that way, but, you know, I might have gone a little overboard. You know, not that I've retired my 1911s or anything. I just, you know, I kind of let them sit on the shelf, and I have found a really nice Day-Glo Green 9mm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it has a matching holster, and I just put it on, and I make sure I tuck my shirt in behind the so it just hangs it out.
You got to be joking. You normally don't go shopping for 9mm. What's, are you feeling feverish, or?
If I ever had something like that, please shoot me in the head.
Oh, okay, so you are being facetious. Okay, you had me concerned there for a minute, because I...
Yes. No, I was just merely talking about the individuals that turn into a fashion show with their little pink guns and their purple ones and their yellow ones and red ones. It's like, really? I mean, that just, you might as well have a big lighted billboard that just hovers above your head that says, shoot me first.
The fact that somebody would even consider doing something like that.
And then on top of that, see, now I'm about to go on a tangent. So, you have a gun that is essentially one step above a high point. And it's, say it's purple, and then you go and you spend, let's say $200 for that gun, but then you go to Walmart and you buy a holster there that is essentially just nylon and Velcro, and a thumb brake with a button on it.
Well, sounds good to me. What's wrong with that? You're just being a little frugal, tactically frugal. How about that?
Well, wait. It's not even done.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't have belt loops. It just has a clip. Just a clip. Very, very reminiscent of a money clip that you just clip on your belt and you let it just hang out.
So I see where you're going with this, because just the other day I saw a gentleman utilizing what we would consider an inside the waistband holster as mm-hmm. an actual outside the waistband holster.
I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to. There's no other words called it. Stupidity. If you're going to have a gun, you want, then you take the time, you go, you buy a proper holster, you find out how to wear that holster, you find out where to wear that holster, and you use it correctly.
Well, actually, I hate to tell you, but somebody on that level just needs to be relegated to water pistols, and that's about it. Because, I'm sorry, if you're on that level and you're actually brandishing a weapon in that fashion, well, I should say brandishing, carrying that weapon in that fashion, it's, well, painfully obvious you don't know what you're doing, but painfully obvious you don't understand what personal accountability
just
is.
Just so that there is no misconception, so our permits do we have where we are? It does not say anything on here about concealed carry or open carry. It just says, you are hereby licensed in said state to carry on your person or in a vehicle any lawfully possessed handgun. It doesn't say carry open. It doesn't say carry concealed or half and half.
Well, yeah, that's one state, too. And keep in mind, also, you need to pay attention to what your local laws, your state laws, state, literally. Because there are some states where you are allowed to carry open carry, but you are not allowed to conceal. And then there are some areas where you are allowed to carry concealed, but not open. So, you have to stay on top of, once again, that's a part of this mantra, of which we speak, that you, if this is something that you have not yet done, before, this is something new to you as far as carrying some type of weapon, then, even if it's a pocket knife, there are just so many aspects, that you... want to stay on top of before you even decide to do that in practice.
Well, and where I was going with that was the ones that you see with their fancy little pink gun, they have not taken the time to do their due diligence and actually read up on it and find out what you can do, what you cannot do. They just go, ooh, I got a card. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, it's called personal accountability and responsibility. And those are two words that I think have been outlawed, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was. That's part of the cancel culture.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. and that's exactly how, excuse me, my apologies, the law will hold you should you take action and do something improper, illegal, even maybe not so wise, depending on how we want to put it.
Okay.
That, you know, you very well will probably be judged.
And I hate to say it, but it's almost like the state government has purposely stacked the deck against you. So here we have, drawing a blank, Castle Doctrine. Okay. do you know about the changes to the Castle Doctrine?
I haven't read about it in the last couple of months.
Remember how it used to be? It was only inside the house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the door or window was the threshold, and, you know, said individual had to fall within the confines of that building. Mm-hmm. Well, then they expanded it to where it covered your house, outbuildings,
curtilage. And the yard. Curtilage is the legal term for that.
Now they have changed it even further to where if I'm out in public and I see, somebody getting a beat down, for all intent and purpose, I am in the legal right to use up to deadly force to protect that person.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm aware of that.
These are the things that people need to educate themselves on, because that is part of that split second decision that has to be made in any situation.
Well, and that's where I go back to, that's why we were trying to stress that civilians do not have a legal obligation to stop a threat. excuse me. And that's the thing. That's we're getting into that territory where even if the law, you know, on the criminal side covers you, there's also the civil side that we have to consider.
Yeah.
Because civil litigation will more than likely destroy the rest of your life.
Oh, yes. It will cripple you for the
rest
of your life.
And once again, there are a number of examples, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately just because there was, deadly force situations in public, whether at shopping malls or schools or places of worship within the last couple of years that anybody can go and pull up, of course. We're all familiar with this stuff. Look into some of the aftermath, if you will, and that's actually another way to enlighten yourself a little bit as a civilian as far as, hey, what to expect on the civil side of the house if something were to happen. And I want to throw in, there are a number of options now. Within the last 10 to 15 years, there are a handful of companies, and I think we've touched base on a few of them, that offer, it's kind of like AAA for the gun owner,
mm-hmm.
Okay, to where they will offer some sort of legal aid. Now, I want to stress something about that. My apologies. I have a frog in my throat. But do not take these advertisements for face value. Okay? Nope. Read, take the time to study, just like every other aspect of, once again, choosing to practice to, carry some sort of weapon in public. Okay, read up on what services they actually provide for however much money a year. Okay, because reading the fine print will very much could mean the difference between you successfully defending yourself and ending up getting sued for billions of dollars.
Or going to jail.
Or going to jail on the criminal side, yes. But with those offerings specifically, and I'm not saying they're bad or good, but I had two friends approach me in the last couple of years asking me about this, one of whom had spent several hundred dollars thinking that he was covered. They gave him a little card, you know, wallet card and everything. Hey, in case of a situation, you know, make this phone call first, you know.
I think it was called U.S. Concealed Carry.
Yeah, that's one of them. Yes, like that's yeah. one of them that I'm of which I'm referring.
Yeah.
But the thing is, read the fine print, because once again, my friend was under the impression that he was covered in a certain fashion. Well, it turns out after he showed me the card, and it, I can't remember now, I looked at the card and something caught my eye. It just didn't sound right, or it just didn't add up to what his explanation was of what he had purchased. So I asked him, I said, hey, it might be a good idea, grab your paperwork, and he did, and we sat down one day and went through all of the paperwork, and I took a little highlighter and showed him, as you're not as protected as you think you might be.
I mean, he was probably more protected than the average Joe Schmo.
Yes, don't get me wrong. Now, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that was a bad thing as far as what he signed up for, you know, as far as that particular package, I guess, if you will, is a good way to put it. So, I'm not levels or tiers
that you
can, I'm not putting anybody down. I know, but there's a difference, you know. He was under the impression that if he called this number, he would automatically have an attorney assigned to him, and he would be, you know, hey, everything's done. He doesn't have to do a thing or lift a finger or anything. And after reading the fine print, that was not the case.
No.
Now, once again, I'm not accusing anybody of anything or putting down any of those services, not at all, because once again, once I asked, I said, hey, you might want to recontact these guys and figure out exactly what the heck is going on here, and what's and so once he did, a couple weeks later he came back and said, yeah, he said, it's not what I thought it was. I'm glad you pointed it out, because obviously if something had happened, you know, I would have been thinking about this, and I could have really screwed myself up. I said, yes, exactly. So once again, I'm not putting any of those offerings down at all, but please be careful before. Or even if you already have signed up for that stuff, which is just fine, you know, take that paperwork and read the fine print, because it may be a bit different than what you might be thinking that you're covered, or how you're covered. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, because you could get 100% cleared on a legal side, but it could be mom, sister, brother, uncle, friend of the family, whatever, could take you to court for wrongful death or whatever on the civilian side and literally clean you out. They'll take everything that you have and anything that you ever thought that you might have in the future.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
Yes, you know. Just... and, of course, this is also a good time to remind everybody that these are merely suggestions. We are not legal experts. As you are well aware by now, we are nothing more than a few knuckle-draggers attempting to provide some cheap entertainment to everybody.
But I do like to stay in a Holiday Inn Express every once in a while.
Well, yeah, I understand that. Okay. But, hey, after your next visit to your therapist, we can work through some of that stuff. And it'll be, you know, hey.
I'm running out of therapists. After, like, two visits, they have to see therapists.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. It's pretty bad. You know, I finally had to ask myself the other day, should I take it seriously that my therapist laughs at me uncontrollably? Spontaneously, normally toward the end of our sessions. I mean, is that something important I need to address? Or
I had one therapist that actually decided to barricade themselves behind the desk.
Well, see, you have a nasty habit. I'm surprised you actually admitted it in the last episode or two, but you have a nasty habit of kicking medical professionals in the head. I mean, I don't know if you've happened to notice that, but I'd almost venture to think that you might actually have just the slightest of anger management issue. with when it comes to medical professionals. Because everybody else, you seem to get along with just swimmingly, but...
I do not recall.
I
don't recall that.
Okay, okay. We'll just tackle another topic then.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's fine. So, how well did you get along with your first FTO when you were... I mean, was he like a father figure to you, or, you know, how did you...
It's more just check the block.
Okay, all right. Yeah, exactly. I just want to check. Yeah. I just want to check and make sure. Okay, we can move on now.
Kind of a check the block thing.
Okay, good deal. All right, yeah. We can move on then. But yeah, and that's, of course, the other thing is, most civilians don't have the benefit of, FTO training and things like that, so... once again, now I will tell you that there are some good training programs out there. The problem is trying to differentiate what might be best for you. And once again, very much akin to the legal protection offerings out there, you want to do your homework before you choose a training outfit or opportunity, I should say. Because once again, a lot of people out here may not be exactly who they portray themselves to be. So, funny how that happens, but...
That seems to be more times than not.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to give the society some benefit, but... Yeah, all right. Yeah, it... Okay, more times than not. Well, 95% of the time, it's kind of like dealing with devil spawn. You know, the politician. All politicians are crooks. All politicians are selfish. And, of course, that's why we refer to them as devil spawn. Even if they say they're their friend and, hey, we're here for you and all that, talk is cheap because all it does is emanate from a pie hole. So.
Yeah, no.
But once again, that's merely our personal view on politicians.
Yeah, don't get me started.
Because that I will tell you, getting into this business for those of you who may be considering law enforcement as a career, unless you've had the benefit of growing up around family members or close friends of the family that were law enforcement officers, and you have the benefit of their viewpoints and their experiences and everything like that. A lot of us getting into the business did not have that benefit. So, I don't say you get blindsided, but...
No, you get blindsided.
Okay, you get blindsided with the politics. Yeah, there's departmental politics and all kinds of stuff. And, of course, it varies between agencies and locations and stuff like that. So, just be wary. You know, it's what you try to prepare yourself to deal with bad guys. You try to prepare yourself to deal with goofy schedules and working without a lot of sleep. And, you know, hey, once again, like I said, you know, trying to obtain that superior mindset so you can hold yourself to that higher level and all of this. Well, at the same time, get ready for the politics.
Well, any department, whether it's a large department, medium, or a small municipality, it doesn't matter. You always have, your internal laws and regulations and rules. So you do your best to learn those, and you do your best to follow those, and then all of a sudden, when something happens, you say, well, according to, Section 2, Paragraph 1, subsection A, I'm covered, and then they're going to go, well, yeah, but that doesn't really apply. We have to do it this way.
Well, actually, I'm really glad you brought that up, Frank, because on the civilian side of the house, that's another great point to make, is that civilians don't have the benefit of standard operating procedures. Mm-hmm. Okay, and actually, not to sound goofy, and actually all kidding aside, that would not be a bad idea. Okay, if you are a civilian and you are seriously contemplating, carrying a weapon, I say weapon in general, I don't care, once again, it could be a, a squirt gun, whatever. The whole thing is that might not be a bad idea. Grab a copy of your local police department's SOPs and take a gander at some of those SOPs.
It's kind of a spinoff, but if you start looking just in the county alone, you know, you have certain quote unquote firearm safety courses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would really like to see somebody put together a no-nonsense safety course. And, you know, it's like, answer the real questions. Talk about the real scenarios that you're going to possibly run into. Not, you know, some national level, okay, you have to do this, and you have to talk about this, and you answer those questions, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I get it, because, yeah, more localized.
You know, it's like...
You want to, and we used to have that around here, but once again, thanks to politicians, we no longer have those, some of those options. But yeah, the thing is, we take, you're going to have to take your training endeavor in steps. Mm-hmm. Just like we do in law enforcement, just like the military, same thing, okay? First of all, it is all about safe handling. And once you get to a point where you are proficient with safe handling firearms, then you can move into the marksmanship aspect. And once again, you know, shooting, you know, getting experience with a plethora of weapons, you know, not just one, you know, and maybe have... once again, depending upon your local area, it may be difficult or challenging to find more than one or two instructors you might be comfortable with. But at any rate, spend some time perfecting your marksmanship skills. In other words, just because you take a 10-hour class doesn't mean you're proficient enough to go carry a gun in public and make split-second life or death decisions. Okay?
The only thing that makes you proficient in is holding your gun until I need it.
Exactly.
That's it.
And that's, yeah, that's, it's a way to put it that even some law enforcement officers don't understand.
But, you know, the thing is, if you're going to do a class like that, you have to do it with somebody that you do not know. You cannot go and teach your girlfriend how to shoot or your wife how to shoot, because in that dynamic, one is always going to overrun the other one.
Oh, yes.
So if I'm on the range and I'm trying to teach, you know, little honey here how to shoot, and she's getting pissed off because I'm trying to teach her something, well, she's going to revert back to how she would be at home. And it never works.
Well, and of
out.
Course, the guy always needs to show off in front of his yeah. lady. But I'm going to tell you something, ladies. Let's see here. 4 or 5 years. Something like that. About 5 years. I was a civilian firearms instructor and a range master at a city firearms facility. And we were normally open on weekends. And it never failed, you know, as soon as we got the first couple of warm weekends, man, we were just inundated with people. And we weren't a huge facility. We had maybe 25 or 30 lanes, depending upon how we set up the range and everything. But yes, it was inevitable that the boyfriend-girlfriend teams would show up.
Yeah.
And of course, here we go. Okay, ladies first, of course. Now, ladies, I'm going to tell you, it takes all of about 5 minutes to turn a young lady into Annie Oakley. Okay. Mm-hmm. I did it time and time and time and time again. Okay. Because you know what? Every young lady that I taught how to shoot took me literally. You know what? Okay. Stand here because you want to do this. Okay. Or hold your weapon this way because of this, this, and this. Okay. okay, this is how you are safe, you know, with this firearm doing this. Okay, great. When it came to marksmanship, okay, we don't pull triggers, we squeeze triggers. Okay, and boom, boom, boom. And I'm going to tell you something. Within about 15 to 20 minutes of actual shooting, I had them shooting my .357 Magnum revolver with full Magnum loads, okay, within a half an hour to 45 minutes of first stepping onto the range, and they are putting the majority of their rounds in the bullseye, okay, within, like I said, less than an hour, full Magnum loads. I put some 38s in there, stuff like that, to get them used to stuff and blah, blah, blah. Now, when it came time for the boyfriend, do you honestly think that guy was shooting bullseye rounds with full Magnum loads in less than an hour?
Here's the thing. It all boils down to one word and one word only. Pride. The guy is always going to be walking around with a chip on his shoulder. He's not going to let some other guy tell him how or what to do in front of his girl.
No.
It's like, I can do that. Shut up. I got this. Next thing you know, he's burying the front sight blade in his forehead because he's an idiot. But, you know.
Oh, yes. You got to love it. So, yes, exactly. Yeah, Frank, that's an excellent point. Yeah, find strangers. Be around strangers. And that might even raise the stress level just a wee bit. And there again, I'm not saying that this type of training has to be stressful. It's not supposed to be stressful. But once again, you have to understand the ramifications and this dynamic that, yes, if you
train under a stressful situation, by the time it gets into a real world situation,
and I get that, but starting off, you don't want to be overly stressed. I mean, you want to make sure you get the safety skills well in hand, basic marksmanship skills well in hand. Once you have the basics, and you are, once again, what level of proficiency one would be with basics, then as you get into the real world aspect, you know, it's going to be time to put on some stress and get some force on force training and stuff like that. And that's where things get down and dirty and, okay, blood, sweat, tears, and all that. And once again, you can take that as far as you want to take it. But I think that'll wrap up another episode of why society's doomed. I mean, you know, aspects of carrying firearms.
Yeah, we'll expound on this one in the next episode. But until then,
take care.
And we shall see you on the flip side.